I'm an alcoholic. My name's Dave Thomas. And, just want to take a little deep breath here for a minute, because the fact that I'm standing up here tonight looking at you guys from the place that I came from is an absolute miracle. And for any of you who knew me when I came in here, for me to stand up here tonight and be able to talk in a full sentence or to tell my story in the way that I'm going to tell it tonight is an absolute miracle, because I showed up here on my last leg. I showed up here with very little left in the tank to keep on going. And for that, I am truly grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I owe my life to this program. And I hope I can show that gratitude tonight by the way I share with you and the openness of my heart. You'll have to forgive me. I'm a little emotional today. I don't know why. It started off this morning. I'm an alcoholic, and I have every one of those things that alcoholics do, and it goes in my household. My wife's an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic, and we have a household that's built on Alcoholics Anonymous. That also means that all of those character defects that we have learned about in this room, we practice in our home. At 1 o'clock in the morning, I was on the couch last night throwing a temper tantrum, and so I can stand up here and look at you guys in the face and tell you that, you know what, my character defects are active, and I have those things going on. But the great thing that me and my wife share is this program, and we spend our morning sitting together looking at each other and talking about what was going on, and being able to share about what we know is a solution and not live in the problem. And you know what? There's a lot of love in my house. And it's directly related to this program and what you guys have taught us. So for that, I am also truly grateful. If you don't like what you hear tonight, it's Maureen's fault. She's the one that railroaded me into coming up here. So, not really. I went to rehab with Maureen, and the fact that we're still friends and we still get to see each other when I come here is a really cool thing, because we're like the only two left out of all the people who started that. In that time, so that's a really great deal. So what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I hope that I share not only my story, but I share the solution in my story. So I kind of go back and forth in it. I was born to two wonderful parents. I was had every reason to achieve in life, but from my earliest memory, I was full of fear and just fear in every sort of the manner. I was a square peg in the round hole. No matter how hard I tried to fit in, no matter how hard I wanted to be a part of, I always felt outside. I always felt different. I always felt like there was something wrong with me. As I've liked to hear that, I felt like I didn't get the owner's manual. I felt like I didn't know what this whole thing was about. I really didn't feel like I got this human thing. I didn't feel like I fit in. And my parents really, gave me a lot of love, and I had every thing in that house that should have made me want to achieve, and instead I wanted to run away and hide. I wanted to hide under my bed. I truly believed that there was always something coming after me. And what I know today is I probably needed a drink from the very first day that I got onto this planet, because there was just something. I was raw nerves. I felt like there was no skin, I felt like everything was abrasive. I was oversensitive. I cried and I fought and I whined about everything, And I was also a sick baby. I had asthma, and my mom used to have to stay up with me, and she used to have to, try to get me to calm down and relax. And that's still to this day. I need to calm down. I need to relax. I need to take my breath. And it started from a very young age. I've always felt like there's just something wrong with me. I knew there was something wrong with me. And I remember being fairly young, and my dad telling me that his dad was put into a psych ward when he was older. And I was thinking to myself, that's what's going to happen to me one day. I know that there's something wrong up here. I think there's something wrong in my head. There's something wrong wired. I'm going to end up in that place. Little did I know that was true, and later on in my story you will find out about that. But, that's just kind of the alcoholic mentality that I had. There was just something not right about me. And then, I went to school, and I remember my very first day of kindergarten, I got in a fight. And I got in a fight not because I'm a tough guy. I got in a fight because I'm a scared person. And I'm like the animal you back into a corner and he comes out and attacks, not because it's a violent animal, because it's a scared animal. And that's what's inside of me. I'm not a tough person. I'm not a crazy person. I'm a scared person. And that fear drives me to do things that I didn't want to do. And I know if I could have had a drink at kindergarten that day, it would have probably been a different story. I'd have probably been that guy's best friend. But instead, I got in a fight with him. So I have a learning disability. I have dyslexia, and I probably have every other thing that they can call. And I use that as a crutch. And I use that as a crutch all the way through school. And I always felt like that made me different. And I got always to go to those special ed classes. I always got to be a part of the situation that made me special. So I didn't really have to put that extra effort in. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't read and write. And it's probably not because I couldn't read and write. It's because nobody ever really made me read and write. And I remember my sponsor telling me that it was my stuff, and I had to write it, and I had to do it. And you know, I'm really grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, because I would have probably still to this day not been able to read and write if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, you know, I also have a mother that's an Al-Anon, and my mother basically did 12 years of school. She basically walked me through every bit of my school. She made sure that I went, you know, into these classes, and she would go to fight for me every day, and she would, you know, do my work and call the teachers and take me to this stuff. And that really got me through school. And if it wasn't for, you know, my mom, I wouldn't have had a diploma. And I can stand up here today and really look at her and realize that, you know, my mom graduated school. I didn't. And I graduated from school because my mom wanted me to graduate from school, not because I did the work to graduate from school. And I'm really grateful that she did what she did for me, because it would have been a much harder thing. But the reality is I had a lot of potential, as you hear in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I didn't have a lot of drive. I didn't have the emotion and the drive to go out there and do the things that I needed to do to achieve. And so, basically, I kind of lied and cheated my way through school, and I became a great manipulator. I could manipulate my way through a lot of things. I'd get into a teacher, and I just seemed to be able to sweet talk. I've been able to tell stories from a very young age. I'm a great storyteller. I can remember very young in my life being able to go to my grandma's house telling my grandma how my mom beats me and she doesn't feed me and she does all of these things to me just because my grandma paid attention to me. She's like, oh, my God, baby. And so I would just tell her these great, wonderful stories about how my mom was so terrible and this and that. And my mom would come to pick me up and my grandma would be angry at her and yell at her and be really upset at her. And it's, you know, that's just this mentality that I have. I just use people to get what I want. And I tell them these stories that aren't true, and I make you see me in a light that's not really true, you know. And I did that all the way through, you know, elementary school and junior high school. But I got into high school, and I ran into a teacher that really didn't buy my bull. And he kind of saw through me, and he kind of saw that, you know, that there was some things that I needed to work on. And he pulled me aside, and he said, you know what, David, if you're going to achieve in life, you need to get busy, and you need to do things a lot different. But right about that same period of time in my life, I met some people that were doing other things. They were going to the park after school, and they were drinking, and they were smoking, and they seemed to have it together. And I wanted to be more part of that than what that guy was telling me. And I chose to go over and hang out with some of those guys. And I'll tell you what, I'm grateful for alcohol. Because if I wouldn't have had those drinks and I wouldn't have had those things, I don't think that I would have made it through my teenage years. I definitely wouldn't have made it through my 20s. Alcohol did for me what no other thing could do for me. It brought me peace, and it brought me serenity. And as soon as I ingested alcohol, everything that was wrong with me went away, and everything that was right with me came in. And I was no longer the skinny, short, stupid, retarded-looking kid. I was everything I ever wanted to be. I was full inside. I had full feeling of reality, you know? Even though I know today that wasn't reality, but it seemed like I could just see in color. And I could talk to girls, and I could go hang around the, you know, the cool guys, and I didn't feel like I was less than. And it just, alcohol did for me what, you know, what really basically a higher power would have done for me, because I didn't really have a higher power. My higher power was Cheryl, my mom, and I used my mom as my higher power. But that day I found something to replace that, and that was alcohol. And I can't tell you that I thought about drinking every day after that, but I'll tell you what, any chance I got or any place that I went that I could find alcohol, I got it. Also, about that time, I was a race car driver. I was driving small cars and going around the country and a thing called Mickey Thompson, which was off-road racing cars. And I had a pretty good career in it. I was actually a pretty good driver. I had some really good natural ability. But as I said, I have a fear. There's a fear inside of me that makes me want to do things better than everybody else. And before I even get in that car, I'm already got myself so worked up. Kind of like tonight, before I ever got to this podium, I already get all worked up, you know. But when you get in a race car and you get like that and your nerves aren't calm, you generally kind of try too hard too quick. And a lot of times I try too hard too quick, and I seem to crash those cars a lot. And I seem to always come up a little bit short. And, you know, that about that same time that I was racing those cars, I kind of found the alcohol and the drugs. And you know what? That looked a whole lot cooler than that did. And I really made a decision that wasn't cool anymore, and I didn't really want to do that, and I'd rather race cars than I would want to do that. And about that time, we also had, I had got a lottery ticket one day at the store with my mom, and that lottery ticket was a scratcher, and we scratched it off and sent it in, and it came back to go to the big spin, and my mom went and spun the wheel, and we won $1 million. Now, $1 million is really not that much money when you win it in the lottery. First of all, it's like $30,000 a year for 20 years. And we own a business, and so you take $30,000 and you put it into that business, and it's not that much money. It really doesn't come out to be that big of a deal. But what happened is like with any alcoholic, I had arrived. And it made me who I thought I was going to be. And I went to school that next day, and I went out there, and I was somebody. And I knew I was somebody. And I might as well have been drived up in a limousine because I acted like that. And I got all of those friends that weren't really my friends. And I started hanging out with all of those people that were never really my friends. And all the people who were my friends, I didn't want to be friends with anymore. And I made a decision based upon self that later came back to really hurt me. And that decision is that I'd rather hang out with a bunch of people doing drugs and alcohol than those people that were always my friends from my earliest days, you know? And that's really kind of the mentality of the alcoholic mind of mine. And so I stop racing, and we get a boat, and I'm working on this boat, and I'm kind of doing my own thing, and I got a captain that's kind of doing his own thing, and we're not really making the business work, and we're doing more of playing around than making money, but I'm not going, you know, I don't want to go back to working at the glass shop, so I'm pretty much just doing the boat thing. And about that time is Christmas, and we take the day off, and we're going to go out diving, and I do some drinking the night before. And I get up to go on that boat in the morning, and we go out, and we're off of Point Loma, about 90 feet of water, and we're setting up to go down, and I'm feeling sick, you know. I'm getting kind of woozy, and I got getting my equipment on, and I'm not putting it on quite right because it's not feeling very well, and I feel like I'm going to throw up, and I don't want to throw up in front of everybody, so I get it on kind of wrong, and I get in the water, and I start going down, and I start having problems with my equipment. And I get down about 90 feet, and somehow, some way, my hood comes off, and my mask comes off, and instead of, you know, just taking my time to find it, I start struggling, and then I lose my regulator and some other stuff, and finally, I get to the point to where I'm feeling like I'm going to drown. And I make the decision that it'd be better to die on the surface than to die at the bottom, and I drop my weight belt, and I go from 90 feet to the surface straight up. And what happens is the air in your lungs and in your blood expands faster than it can come out, and you get what they call embolized, or the bends. And I hit the surface of the water, and this part of my story is what happened to me, and I'm not telling you that there's anything that you have to believe. It's just my story. My story is that I came out of my body, and there was a bright energy above me. Some people would call it a light. It was definitely an energy to me, and it pulled me up to it, and it put me really close to it, and I was part of it. And what I was is what that energy was, and that energy surrounded me, and I felt only love and peace, and every bit of fear and every bit of thing that ever stood between me and what I was gone, and I felt at home. But that energy informed me that it was time for me to go back and finish what I had started. That I had a purpose, and that was to go have a human experience, and that I had to go back and do that. And I got shoved back into my body. And the pain that I felt when I got back into that body and the fear that I felt when I got back into that body was overwhelming. It was way more than I could even handle, and I started to panic, you know. And I remember just screaming, I'm dying, I'm dying. But really what was going probably through me was the fact that I was scared to be leaving. I believe today that I'm a spiritual being having a human experience. And I know that from my experience with this scuba diving accident, that I am a spiritual being when I'm done with this human body. This human body is just here to have a human experience, and I got put back to have this human experience, and that's why I'm here tonight, is because I need to have this human experience, and I found that in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's probably no better place that you could come to have than a human experience here. But anyways, they put me into a basket and flew me to UCSD, and they got me in there, and they put me in a decompression chamber, and they pushed me back together. And I'd like to tell you that I was really enthused about getting put back together, but I really wasn't. I remember my mom looking through the little porthole and seeing me and seeing that that I wasn't doing very well, and I could see the tears rolling down her face, but I really didn't want to make it through that. I didn't really have a lot of fight to want to survive. But God has a different plan for me, and you know, somehow, some way pulled me through that. But I was not convinced that my journey was to be a human, my convinced to be less than a human being was pretty much the way that I wanted to be. You know, I really had no drive to go out and participate in life, and alcohol and drugs worked really well on that. And I started doing a lot of both. I'm an alcoholic first and foremost, but I do drugs alcoholically, and I do lots of them all the time. And usually the two mixtures make me a little bit crazy. And so by the time I was 21 years old, I weighed 90 pounds, and I was dying from alcoholism. And it was my first trip to a rehab. I got kind of ran out of all people that were willing to deal with me anymore, and I called up Mom, and she got me into a rehab. And I went in there, and all I wanted to do was stop doing what I was doing. I wasn't really willing to change. I just didn't want to have the problems that I had. And I got in there, and I did the bare minimum of what I was supposed to do. And I can remember my last day there, they had like the sneeze thing, and I looked at my mom, and I looked at my dad, and I think from my heart, I really wanted to do the right thing, but in my head, I couldn't. I wasn't done. I hadn't found that level of desperation, and I just didn't do it, you know? I just didn't do what I needed to do, and that was to admit to my innermost self that I was truly an alcoholic. And I got out of there, and about 9 months later, I was over at my buddy's house, and he handed me a Heineken, and we smoked a joint, and nothing bad happened, and I realized, well, if I just drink beer and I just smoke weed once in a while, everything will be okay. And you know what? It seemed to be okay for a while. But like any alcoholic, the reality once again set in, and the reality was I can't just have one once in a while. I got to drink every single day. And alcohol became my master, and it started to run my life. And I met her, and I don't know about any of you guys, but I take hostages. And about that time, I was selling things to get hostages, so I sold some, and I said, you don't have to pay for it if you become my hostage. And basically, you know, that's probably not the way I said it, but that's what I did. I took this poor girl as a hostage, and I moved her into my house, and we proceeded to have a family life. And, you know, I'll stand here tonight and tell you that I had a great family, but I had a sick family. And everything that I knew about being a father or a husband or a boyfriend or any of those things, I learned from, you know, watching my dad. And, you know, the honest truth was I didn't have a lot of tools to do that. And I have a disease of alcoholism, and I'm drinking all the time, and alcohol slowly stopping to work. And all of those things that I watched my dad do, all of a sudden I was doing. That verbal abuse and that angerness and all of those things, I treated that girl just like that. And I started being this monster that I didn't like. But I just kept drinking it away, and I was just hoping that it would get better. And the reality of the whole thing was that it didn't get better. It got worse. And one day I remember looking in the mirror, and I swear I was looking at my dad and not at me. Everything I despised about my father, I despised about myself because I'd become just like him, if not worse. And about that time in 2003, the wildfires came and burned my house down. And I can remember the night that those fires were coming and remembering that there was this feeling of change coming, this feeling of doom, actually. And the next morning, that fire came and that girlfriend left and I stayed, and I was going to fight that fire with a garden hose and a Heineken. And what came out of that was the fact that the fire came, and to be honest with you, I think I really wanted to stay there and die that day, but there's something inside of me that won't let me do that. And the fires come, and it's just this wall of fire, and it's like a tornado of fire, and I dropped the garden hose and the Heineken, and you know it's bad when you drop the Heineken. It's a garden hose first and then the Heineken, but I drop them, and I run and get in that truck, and I try to start it, and I try to start it, and it won't start, and it won't start, and the next thing I know, I see the windows explode in this house. And for some reason, my truck starts, and I'm driving away, and I just see the flames everywhere, and I know that this is the beginning of the end. And, you know, I end up moving that girlfriend, two pit bulls, and an alcoholic craziness into my parents' house. And I set out to rebuild this house and to drink myself to death. And it was a real close thing to see which one would happen first, but somehow, some way, God rebuilt that house, and later in my story, you'll hear why. But basically, we rebuilt that house, and I moved back in there, and the girlfriend and me, kind of, things just don't work anymore, you know? It's just pretty much at the end of the rope, and she decides that she's not going to come with me back into that house. And the insanity that went on in my parents' house during those times that we lived there is ungodly. I mean, it was just really, really beyond what I could even imagine putting my parents through, because my relationship with that girl was really sick, and my parents' relationship wasn't the greatest either, and there was a lot of stress, and the two pit bulls destroying their house, and I mean, you could only imagine what went on in there. But somehow, some way, they tolerated it once again, and I got into that house, and I was there by myself, and I was trying to drink myself to death, and there wasn't enough alcohol. And I drank, and I drank, and I drank. And I remember one morning going into work and going up into my mom's office and looking at my mom and saying, there's something wrong. I can't stop shaking. My body just shakes from head to toe. And she said, you know what, David? I think it's the alcohol. And I got really angry, and I think I threw some things around her office and stormed out. And I went across the street, and I walked into a liquor store, and I bought a Red Bull and a bottle of vodka, and I poured some in there, and I drank it, and the shake stopped. And I knew at that point in period of time that I had a problem with alcohol, but I really wasn't willing to, I just was not capable of managing enough to deal with it. Unfortunately, or fortunately, a few days later, that bottom really came to me, and the night came where I was drinking and there wasn't enough alcohol, and I got in my truck and I drove to that girl's apartment, and I was going to have her make me better. And I knocked on her door, and she wouldn't answer it, and I kept pounding on the door, and finally she kind of cracked it open, and I pushed it open, and she was in there with another guy. And what I would have done that night is gotten my truck and drove through the front of their place and killed both of them. And I know that for a fact today, because that's where I was in my mentality. But there was a power greater than myself working that day, and it made me just walk away, and I didn't have any fight left. And I got my truck, and I drove to go to Pine Valley and drive off the Pine Valley Bridge. And I had determined that there was no fight left. And there was many times that I thought about suicide, but this time it wasn't really a lot of thought. There was just a motive to go do it. And what happened was, is I came to in a church parking lot out of a blackout. And I was on my knees, and I had the most wonderful thing happen to me that could happen to any alcoholic. I had a place of desperation that was so great that I was willing to do what we call a surrender. And I surrendered unconditionally. I didn't care anymore. Whatever you want to do with me, God. Because, see, I was very angry at God for bringing me back from what I'd been in. And I had no relationship with a higher power whatsoever. And I'd been fighting him the whole time. And I finally surrendered to that. And I said, if you want me here, you got me here. But you're going to have to do with what you want. And he had me call my parents. My parents came down there and they picked me up and they took me to their house. And that same God was working for them that night that was working for me. And for the first time, they didn't try to fix me. They called the police. They came, they picked me up, took me to the hospital. I said two magic things, suicide and homicide, both get you a nice day in a wonderful place for 3 days. I like those places. And I get there, and I figure I'm going to meet her there, and I'm going to do some finger painting, and they're going to give me some wonderful drugs that are going to make it all go away. But the reality is that God who got me there also was there. And he got me a doctor who saw through my bowl that said, David, you're an alcoholic and there's nothing I can do for you. The only hope for you is that you have a spiritual experience sufficient enough to take away your obsession for alcohol. That's the bottom line. I had to find a higher power that I could do business with and him to help me. And fortunately, I called mom one more time, and fortunately that God was with her, and she said, David, I can't get you out of this one. And I got really lucky. I got got put back in my room, and I didn't take any of those things that they offered me. And I started to feel like I was going to get sick and shake and die, and instead I fell asleep on a plastic bed. And when I awoke, all of those feelings of pain had just gone away. I didn't have any of those shakes or anything like that. I wasn't feeling well, but I didn't have those terrible detox like I thought I was. And they put me into another facility, and in that facility they brought in H&I meeting. And I am so grateful for what H&I has done, and you know, I couldn't give enough back to H&I, and I've gotten a lot out of H&I as I've done this program. But these guys came in and they told my story, and I can tell you that all the times that I'd gone to meetings before that and all that stuff, I always saw what was different, not what was the same. And then that day, I saw exactly me in them. And this guy told my story, and as he told my story, I became part of whatever he was talking about. And then when he started to talk about the solution, and he said that he became a dad, and he had a job, and he had all of those things in his family he had around him, and he felt comfortable in his own skin, and his life was good, I started to cry. And the tears as they came down my face were tears of hope. Because before that day, I really didn't have any hope. I didn't believe that there was a solution for me. I didn't believe that there was any chance for me. I honestly believed that the best thing that could happen to me was to be locked up in them to keep me away from society. And I walked out of that room that day with a feeling of hope. And I remember seeing my parents talking to the doctors that day. And that doctor told my dad the exact same thing. He told my dad that I was an alcoholic. And the only hope for me was that I got in some kind of a program like Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember my dad just having this fear. I even think that my dad was crying, and my dad didn't cry very much. But nevertheless, my dad came and picked me up from there, which was strange because he made my mom do everything. But that next day, he picked me up and took me to a rehab. And in that rehab, I got in there, you know, and I can't tell you a lot of what I learned from there other than the fact that they took us to meetings a lot. And then Maureen taught me how to do a lot of, you know, getting coffee and stuff like that, that probably we weren't supposed to be doing. But I just thought I'd say that for Maureen's case. But nevertheless, we started going to meetings and we started, you know, getting out there and seeing AA and stuff like that. But my dad came to visit me, and in that time that my dad came to visit me, he kind of opened up a little bit. He finally admitted that we had some problems. And I invited him to an AA meeting. And it was a Sunday night. And we went down to Mission Valley. It was where Old Town Speakers was in Mission Valley. It happened to be the anniversary night. And me and my dad, you know, got to sit and listen. Clancy had come that night and gave a great talk. And as he was talking about the disease of alcoholism, the most amazing thing happened. All of those years of things that stood between me and my dad, all of those resentments, fear, and anger that was between us started to melt away. And before I knew it, I was holding that man's hand. And after the meeting, I was able to look at that man and tell him that I loved him. And my dad said some really great things, like, there's nothing that we can't overcome as long as we stay sober. And as long as you stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, our lives are going to get better. And as long as you do this thing, I promise you that you'll never have to live like that again. And I got to really understand at that point in period of time that there was a power greater than myself working in my life, and that was Alcoholics Anonymous. It was God and Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't know which one came first in my life or which one really I got connected with first, but they kind of came hand in hand together. AA taught me about God, and God gave me AA. And I know that happened in that meeting that night, you know, and I found a peace and a love that I never felt for a man that, you know, it was 34 years that I've known that man, and I honestly couldn't have said that what you guys gave me that night I could have got anywhere else. And I went back to my place, and I called him up and just told him that I loved him. And at 1 o'clock in the morning, they called and they woke me up and they said that my dad had a heart attack. And I went to the hospital and I got to hold his hand while he died. And I'm grateful for what you guys gave me, because that couldn't have happened. I was talking with my mom this morning. I don't think that I would have been able to stay sober and to have had the things that I've had here if it wasn't for that night. There was so much damage. There were so many things that had gone on between me and my father that if you guys wouldn't have gave me that gift, there's no way that I could have had that experience that night. You know, there's no way that I could be standing here today if God wouldn't have given me that experience. And so I took his words, and I, you know, I ended up going back and finishing my stay at that rehab. And I got out, and I just went to a bunch of meetings. I was doing like 3 meetings a day. I was driving all over San Diego just going to meetings. And unfortunately, meetings just don't cure you. Meetings just cannot keep you going. And I was going crazy. And I remember my mom calling me up and going, David, what are you doing? And I said, I don't know. I'm either going to go to a meeting or drive off a bridge, and I don't know which one's coming first. And that's kind of where, you know, I was crazy sober. And I was in a meeting in Alpine, going crazy, stumbling my way through a paragraph that probably took a half an hour to read. And this man came up to me, and he's in an arm sling, and he said, hey, what are you doing on Monday? And I said, I don't know. And he says, well, why don't you come over to my house, and we'll read the book. And I could use some company. And basically, I went to his house, and I'm grateful for that man. And he taught me everything that I needed to know about Alcoholics Anonymous through action. We didn't just read the book. We got into action. That man took me all over the place. And we went to meetings. And when we got to meetings, we got there early. And we set up chairs. And we shook hands. And we made coffee. And we got busy. And before I know it, I wasn't thinking about Dave anymore. Before I know it, I wasn't crazy in my head anymore, because there wasn't any time to get crazy in my head anymore. We were too busy to get crazy in your head. We were going to do stuff. And then we went out on the road, and we started going to conventions, and I started getting to get AA on a whole different light. And my life started to change, and we did those steps. You know, and I did that fourth step, and I did that fifth step. And I found out what the things that were blocking me off. And I found out what those things were going on in my life. And I started to find out why I did what I did. And I started to realize that it took some action to get over them. And I did those 6 and 7. And I went out to go make some of those amends. And they weren't easy. And a lot of people didn't want them. And a lot of my amends were going to take time, and I was going to have to pay back that stuff, and I was going to have to go to work and work 6 days a week and be a son to my mother and be a worker among workers. And I couldn't just expect people to say, it's okay, you're sober, Dave, great. Most of the people in my life had seen the damage that I'd done in the work, and they didn't care that I was sober. Matter of fact, they preferred that I didn't come back to work. But I just kept coming, and I just tried to be a worker, and things got better. And I had some great experiences. I went to Greece and I meditated in a cave for 20 days and had some greatest spiritual experiences. And I can tell you from this podium, the greatest meditation that I've ever had in my life is a meditation I'm doing today. You know, you don't have to go to a cave to meditate. You can have meditation anywhere you want to go have meditation, you know. And really, honestly, I need the meditation here, not there. So, you know, I think that that's really the big deal. And you know, the bottom line, the 12th step, you know, I'm so grateful for those guys who let me do the steps with them. Because I honestly believe that you don't get it until you give it away. And everything that I learned in the steps, I really didn't get it until I started doing it with a bunch of other guys. And the more I do it with guys, the more I see my character defects. The more we do inventory, I see my inventory pop up. And I see more things going on with me, you know. And I'm really grateful for the people who have allowed me to work with them, because it's really changed my life. And I'm going to wrap it up with one last story. And this story is a miracle, because I gave my wife my phone number in this meeting like 5 years ago. And I just want to say she was a newcomer. So if you think that I'm not any kind of spiritual giant, I just told you that I'm not a spiritual giant. I gave her my number, and she was well enough to say, you know what, I'm not ready for that, and when I am, I'll call you. And I said, well, at least I tried. And, you know, like 6 months later, she did. And we came back here, and we sat back there, and we went to meetings, and we went and had coffee, and we went to meetings, and we had coffee, and I courtshipped her, and we ended up getting married. And she became pregnant. And that day came where my daughter was going to be born, and we went to the hospital. And we were in the hospital, and we had this nice room, and it had a view of a window out there. And she was in labor for a while, and things started to go wrong. And the cord had been wrapped around the baby's neck, and the heart rate was dropping, and there was some things going on. And I started to panic. I started to get really scared, and I wanted to go back to that fear, you know, and I wanted to run. And I walked over to the corner of the room, and I looked out the corner of that room, and what I saw was an intake hold of the 72-hour hold that I'd come from 5 years before that. And I realized at that period of time, if God could bring me from that place to this place, he surely got this. And about that time, a woman walked in and she said, you know, darling, you got to push. And I just held her hand and we just prayed and we, you know, we got through it. And my wife pushed out little Abby and she was born and she was okay, you know, and I got to hold her. And I can tell you today that I'm a father because you guys made me a father. And I'm a son because you guys made me a son. And I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous because you allow me to become a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you for my life.